Welcome back. I'm Paula Gordon, Dr. Stuart Kaufman, theoretical biologist and much more, Dr. Charles Raison, my friend Chuck, and much more. Your turn.
So here's my question for you. So is the...
If, coming out of the West Corner.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I sense an implication in what I've read of your work and also what you're saying right now, that there may be something liberating or hopeful about the fact that the mind is not algorithmic, and that essentially, if I understood what you were saying now, that basically it may be a type of phenomena that is in principle unknowable, that you can't write an equation for it, that it transcends that. So my first question, I got two questions. So one, is this just saying that the mind is a class of entity that is sort of epistemologically unknowable, that there's something either because of the limitations of our consciousness or something in the warp and woof of space-time, that it's a type of complex phenomena that cannot be completely brought into a sort of scientific, because scientific, we always think kind of algorithmic, that's sort of the essence of scientific.
Or mathematizable,
yeah,
which algorithmic is an example.
Exactly. That's number one. Are you suggesting that in its essential nature, it is just unknowable, or are you making a stronger ontological claim that behind that unknowability is some sort of other type of process, other type of being or element? And if so, what would that be? That's my question. And the second is, if essentially, let's say consciousness is an essentially unknowable, like these other complex systems, that their primary sort of essence is that they are like quantum events in a way, deeply unpredictable. That they may, the space that they move into, you can never find the right frame for the space they're going to move into. That, you know, you can kind of predict, you kind of hit it and miss it, but sometimes they do stuff that's just like, wow, nobody would have ever thought of that. How is that a cause for hope as opposed to despair?
Boy.
In 35 words or fewer.
Yeah, that's what I said. But I mean, this is, I stayed awake last night thinking about this. I thought, you know, what is...
Let's hit this guy with why is it hope?
Yeah, that is the real,
we spent a great deal of time talking earlier in the day about open systems.
Yeah.
And it's a direct fit to that part of the conversation of orthodoxy versus openness.
Yeah.
Chuck, you've hit on all the right questions, to which, of course, I don't have the answers. But let me start at once. So let me start at one spot.
Okay.
I'm going to say several things, and they're all utterly puzzling.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're now... If what you agreed to, that we couldn't say ahead of time or finitely prestate all possible Darwinian pre-adaptations for humans, is right.
Yes, which clearly it must be. Yeah.
Well, we all agree. Everybody agrees. Let's just pause over that, because everything hinges on that assent, and everybody agrees to it. Let's just look at that for a moment. We're both doctors and scientists.
Right.
How would you prove it? And it's not clear how you'd prove it.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No.
Would you do an experiment? Would you prove a theorem? Somehow we think not for some other reason. Let's just accept it as yes right now and leave it as a puzzle to come back to and have a good scotch over. Now we come to another question. So let's talk about this adjacent possible. Now let me talk about things that aren't quite adjacent possible, okay? That is to say, there seems to be some things that are really close in what's possible, and some things that are further away. And my favorite example is a channel changer, okay, TV channel changer, which needs a couch potato, some television stations, some programming, and some television sets. And then you can invent it and make a buck.
Yeah.
You couldn't in the year 1200 in Europe, right?
Right.
So it was further away.
Right.
Now let's ask the first question that you asked, which is, can we mathematize the adjacent possible? Okay?
Yeah.
Now, we have been taught in the West since Pythagoras and since the Greeks discovered that music was the chord structure of vibrations, right?
Right.
We have been led to believe that everything in the universe is mathematizable. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We really have.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, and that's the root of reductionism in physics, and Galileo and Newton and Weinberg and the dreams of a final theory and string theory and all that stuff.
who've done a bang-up job with that notion that you can mathematize everything.
You can mathematize everything. I don't know the answer, of course, Chuck, but I'll tell you two things. The coming into existence of middle ear bones, and I'd also tell a story about swim bladders, means that the state space of the biosphere cannot be pre-stated. All of our mathematics, because nobody knew that middle ear bones were going to come up.
Right.
So we can't do what Newton told us to do, have the variables and the laws and the whatever, and then calculate. Okay?
Right.
That means we can't state the state space of the biosphere.
Right.
Now, in fact, we can't even make probability statements about them, because to do that, you have to know what the sample space is, and we don't.
Right.
So we don't have any mathematics for that which is going to come into existence, but we don't know it. There's no mathematical structure. It's not obvious to me that we can mathematize this adjacent possible. It's also not obvious to me that it's not. Nothing's obvious to me.
You'd say even probabilistically you couldn't? Because, I mean, one possibility is that, you know, that in very, very complex systems, that you can probabilistically, you know, do a better shot of things that are very, very adjacent than further away.
Well, indeed, we can.
Yeah.
Somehow we can.
Yeah.
That feels right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like weather forecasting, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're gonna screw up, but they're gonna be better for 5 o'clock this afternoon than 5 o'clock tomorrow afternoon.
Yes, you're right, but let me draw a distinction. Weather forecasting is talking about a chaotic dynamical system, and you know about deterministic chaos.
Yep.
So I got some box, and I've got some trajectory in the box, and once I get onto the attractor in the box, nearby states diverge.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're both familiar
yep.
with it. But I know the box. Okay?
We roughly know the box, right?
Yeah, you roughly know the box.
And that's an epistemological problem. You would say that could we completely know that box if we knew everything about every quantum state of every air particle? If you had the computing power to do that, maybe.
Well, I we'll go off in that direction in a second. It's called the Church of the Ever Larger Hilbert Space. A phrase that I learned about a month ago, and I'm in love with it.
Yeah.
So let's get there in a sec, okay? So, but there is a view of quantum mechanics in which, and I think you'll agree that it's nuts when I tell you what it is, but maybe it's not. I don't know. Anyway, it seems to me that we can't mathematize this adjacent possible. And so let's try probability statements for a second. Suppose you flip a coin 10,000 times.
Yeah.
Fair coin.
Yeah.
5,000 heads, 5,000 tails, plus some distribution. It's a Poisson distribution. But you knew ahead of time all the possibilities, right?
Right.
You don't for the emergence of Darwinian pre-adaptations. You don't know the possibilities. That's what you agreed to.
Yeah, but this is where I came back to the question, is that an epistemological limitation or something built in to the nature of the universe itself, right? Because it's, again, this is the, you know, the ever-larger space of what you'd have to know. But that, to me, is a key question, right? Is it just that it's essentially incalculable what would require...
Is this okay?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, maybe what would be required to do it is intractable, that it's essentially impossible because it just is not enough space and time in all of eternity to do it.
Right.
That's one possibility. That seems to me to be different than the idea.
But in principle, it's not.
Mm-hmm. And if it's not possible in principle, then what is it?
They're all fundamental questions. It seems at least that no computer in the universe could do it. So it's at least intractable.
Right.
Okay, we have no problem with that. It may be in principle impossible. I don't know. We're at the edge of what we know about.
Yeah.
Nobody knows about this. Okay. So. Let's hold the Church of the Ever Larger Hilbert space off on the side and come back to it in a minute, because it's either profound or amusing, or both. Okay. The second thing you raised was, so what's this consciousness anyway? You must know David Chalmers and the statement of the hard problem.
I know David Chalmers, but why don't you?
He got to be famous by saying that the hard problem is experience itself.
Mm.
Now, he did more than that, but I mean that's essentially what
he's
saying.
That's enough for today.
Which is sort of neat, but I'm not. It was always pretty clear to me that was the hard problem. So I got to tell you that even if you say mind is quantum mechanical, it doesn't explain why we have experiences.
No, I agree, and I think your
help.
Point about the fact that you can build a quantum computer doesn't get you out of the algorithmic question either.
Absolutely, it doesn't.
Right.
It doesn't. the quantum possibility does answer questions about mental causation, and it, in principle,
yeah.
And it does answer questions about possibly free will, possibly.
Maybe.
It's not clear that it...
Although I struggle with that a little bit.
I do too.
I don't see how that sort of randomness...
That's right. The problem is that how do you get a responsible free will?
Exactly.
Yeah. We've thought about the same things, Chuck.
Okay. Yeah.
So. So I don't think anybody has the faintest clue any more than you do about what consciousness, quotes, is. Nobody knows. It's as Jerry Fodor says, not only do we not know, we don't know what it would be like to know.
Yeah.
Right? But now I'm going to tell you something that's really weird. And I don't know what to make of it. See what you think of it.
Okay.
Okay? So you agree with me that the channel changers in the adjacent possible of the economy of, say, 1980.
Yeah.
And somebody invented it and made a buck. And it wasn't in the adjacent possible of 1200 AD
right.
Europe.
Absolutely.
Or even 1900 AD America.
No. Closer, right? But not there.
Closer, but not
there. Very unlikely that in one step.
You could get
and
there.
And if it did, there wouldn't be an environment for it to be right. adaptive in.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, here's the weird step. I only use the word feel because I'm scared to use the word is.
Yeah.
Doesn't it feel like what's in the adjacent possible... Or an adjacent possibility, if we don't want to. No matter what you do, it seems to be a noun, okay?
Yeah.
Okay? Is a necessary condition for what comes to exist?
Say that again.
Okay. In 1980, there is an adjacent, I want to say, let me just say it.
Say what you want to say.
And then we'll put the caveats all around it. It's like there is this adjacent possible. And it's like the economy evolves into it, and channel changes do come into existence. And if it wasn't in the adjacent possible, using a noun form that may be seductive, then it couldn't come into existence.
Do you know his name, Julian Barbour, the guy
yes.
who wrote The End of Time?
Yeah.
I mean, it
yeah.
sounds a little bit like that's a way of thinking about, right, that maybe this... Maybe this sort of, I mean, it's very, but this is very deterministic, right? Another way to say it is at some deep level, it's all there. And that the adjacent possible is, you know, we may not be able to epistemologically take a guess at it, but that somehow...
It's already there.
Mm-hmm, and it is pulling things toward it.
Oh, well, neat. It's pulling things towards it. Actually, I haven't read Julian Barbour, but I know that he's dealing with the problem.
But that's
time.
Right, this idea that basically, you know, that there is no time and that moments have this bizarre characteristic of
becoming.
Of yes, and also that they have they're coded with this sort of pastness or futureness in relationship to each other. But it's a really strange and interesting idea. But I thought of that when you're talking about this because it sounds like you know this idea that there's something it's unknowable, but it's what's the word? It's just like the future is. Yeah, it's pulling everything toward itself, right? I can't think of the right word for it, but that it's... anyway, okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I got to read Julian Barbour. I've actually talked to him a couple times, but I've never read it. But let's try it.
Okay.
On all these... Notice how wild all this is. So let's just leave it adjacent possible, then you can tell me about Julian Barbour. Suppose that we actually let ourselves say, without being drunk, that... What's in the adjacent possible of the economy is a necessary condition for the coming into existence of something in the real universe, like channel changers,
mm-hmm.
or like the bones of your middle ear. Okay?
Yeah.
This is really weird.
It's a type of reverse causality almost, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I don't know what it is, but look, there's two places where the possible seems to matter. One's in quantum mechanics... where you have the Schrodinger wave, which is on the Copenhagen interpretation,
right.
A possibility wave,
yeah.
Okay, which when you square the heights becomes a probability that if you use a classical measuring apparatus, you will measure certain pre-stated quantum possibilities, and here's the probability of them, like
yeah.
the polarization of this photon.
Yeah.
And here's this other funny possible, which is about television channel changers being able to come into existence. Look at, I mean, all of this modal talk, okay? I've got this strange feeling, Chuck, and I don't know what to make of it, that we've got to, maybe we've got to take the ontological notion of the possible seriously. Maybe it's complete balderdash. I really don't know. But there's something about this that doesn't feel completely nuts. Degree?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, in addition to what's going on, where does hope fit into this? Because you, if you start talking about these big things and the improbable and the possible,
well, that's right.
Your original question was, and how is it hopeful?
Uh-huh. Yeah, if it's unknowable, how is it hopeful? And if you can't tell what the probable is, if the probable is extremely distressing, and I mean, that's because one of the implications of this would be that there's a, which is very Buddhist, it would seem to me there's an extremely finite thing you can do to improve circumstances in the physical world, right? I mean, basically, this is clearly an implication
of
this.
Well, the Buddhists say there's always going to be suffering. You can...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in this realm, that's right. Although their system is very different. There's some ways in which it's a very different idea because they also, you know, believe in these sort of realms where evolutionary processes have stopped and suffering has stopped, which is very big. That's another big difference. They have an end to evolutionary processes. And they also believe in omniscience. Not omnipotence, but omniscience, which would also be completely in violation of this idea, right? Mm-hmm. So there's some profound, profound differences. As I think about this, that's, if I mean, so we're talking about something different. It may be that this is like T.S. Eliot, Four Quartets, too. You know, you hear the footfalls in the world you didn't come into, this idea that there's something, you know, and this makes me want to ask you about many, many universe theories, because that's the other question about what happens to the possible that doesn't seem to happen, you know.
Well, it's off in some other universe.
Well, are we done with hope?
Well, no, because I still want to know.
Hope if there's is a big one for
I mean,
me.
If you can't know.
You remember Pandora's box.
Yeah, well, this is the question, is that, you know, the algorithmic models of the mind seem hopeless to people because it seems as if the mind then is a sort of thing that can be built.
It's a machine.
It's a machine, and that bugs people. Non-algorithmic notions of the mind seem hopeful because they can't be put into that box. But what I hear you articulating is that part of that is that there's this sort of, that they are densely intractable to this sort of algorithmic, scientific, mathematizing kind of things. So then the question is, you know, you talk about, well, what kind of process would it be? And the other question is, why is that a ground for hope? Because if it puts absolute limits then on what could be done to affect those processes or to know those processes. And so, you know... Whereas, you know, some people make arguments that algorithmic models are hopeful because they allow for various, you know, like, I don't know if you read David Deutsch or some of these guys that, you know, ideas that if the Turing principle is universally true, that it might be possible to sort of algorithmically rebuild things that one finds very meaningful, like oneself in a future world, right? You know, I mean, this is the
could it be your brother, so who cares?
Yeah, that's right. Have you ever read The Physics of Immortality?
No.
I'm going to come back to hope when we return in just a moment with Dr. Charles, known to me as Chuck Rizon, Dr. Stuart Coffin. We'll all be back in a moment.